Not your day to Torah Marsha, Yud Aleph Shvat Tovshim Pei Hei, Rav Dudi Rosenberg.
First of all, thank you for having me again. In every way, it's always a pleasure to participate in the Manchester Par. Invariably, a speaker who hasn't got much to say about this week's Sedra, so his results until Tuesday to the backup of last week's Sedra. So since we're Sunday and yesterday was Shabbos, so I thought perhaps it would be an idea to share with you a quick thought on the Pshalach, especially as yesterday was Shabbos. We spoke about the mon in great detail. But when describing the taste of the mon, and what it actually was, the Torah speaks about it as katzapiches bedvash. A few various different translations on katzapiches bedvash. But I'll just point out a thought I saw once from the Slonimer Rebbe, the Divrei Shmuel, going from the earlier ones. And he said that if you note, katzapiches bedvash, the first letters of katzapiches is a chuf, the last one is a suf. Bedvash, the first letter is a base, and the last one is a shin. If you assemble those four letters together, you get an interesting word. K-sha-bos. Shabbos, like Shabbos. So there seems to be a similarity there, an analogy between the two. And he says very beautifully, the mon at the time, every single taste that the person wanted to enjoy from it, all he had to do was to think about that particular food, and he had it. And therefore, that was part of the chesed that the wealthy people who were wealthy from before could do in the midbar, even though they were poor people there. So they said, you know, you probably never tasted a rib steak and chips. Let me tell you that this is something very delicious. Think of that and tell me what you think of it. It could be a master chesed, but essentially, the person who thinks about Shabbos and the person who thinks about the mon, any taste that you want, you could have had. So says the Slonim Rebbe, Katzapiches Bedvash, this also Shabbos is exactly the same. Any taste a person wants to have in Shabbos, he can have too. Depends what he puts, he accentuates in this Shabbos. One person will go for the chum, the kigel, the kishke, and the herring, and all the good delicious delicacies that belong to Shabbos. Another one will think about the kuechsoif, and the Kol Mekadesh Shvi, the attachment and the dvaikus which he can have with Ribbono Shel Olam on this day. So Memayla, he says, Katzapiches Bedvash is Kishabbos. Since yesterday was Shabbos and we're bridging, so to speak, into Parshas Yisroi, I thought it was worthwhile mentioning this little gem. Kishabbos, as the Shabbos of Tatam or Sevidemon, Alatam, depends what you want to have in mind. Which brings us, I've got something to say about Yisroi too. So the Pusik starts off with Vayishma Yisroi Koyen Midyan Choysen Moshe Eskola Shu'usa Lekim Le Moshe, introducing Moshe Rabbeinu, his father-in-law. And it's a very interesting Rasha, the first one. Rasha says, Marsh Mia Shumaibu, what did he actually hear that prompted him to come? Rasha says two things, two particular events. One was Kriyas Yamsif in Milchemes Amulek. On other occasions, Rashi mentions others, but on the opening remark, it was those two. Kriyas Yamsif in Milchemes Amulek. Why specifically these two? When we think about it, the splitting of the Yamsif was probably the greatest revelation that Klal Yisrael ever witnessed. Chazal described it as Ruasu Shifchu Alayam Ashalei Ru Yecheskel Ben Buzi. A simple maidservant was there, present, could actually grasp and visualize a level of prophecy and of Nevi'ah way, way, way above where she should have been. But nonetheless, this was what you would call an ultimate, a pinnacle in attachment and in vision and able to see into the future. So this was Yediyas Hashem, If you want to know when you can point and say Zekaili van Vayi, they literally could feel, experience the manifestation of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam there at the point of crossing the Yamsuf. One climax, so to speak. And then it begs to understand how could it possibly be that the same Yidden were there by Milchemes Amulek very shortly after this event, and they're asking a question, Hayesh Hashem bekirbaini im ayin. Where is the Rabbeinu Shel Olam? Where is he? But you don't understand where he was. Where was he? Badam Tzvadaya Kinim Urev, when he turned the world into a topsy-turvy state, turned nature upside down, and you ask, Hayesh Hashem bekirbaini im ayin. Chaplir. And those are the two things that Rashi mentions. One was Kriyas Yamsif, the ultimate vision, the ultimate Yediyas Hashem, to recognize the presence of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam in their lives. And very shortly afterwards, Milchemes Amulek, where they stood and they said, Hayesh Hashem bekirbayim ayin, doubting the presence of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam altogether. And that is the answer which Rashi says, Vayishma Yisroel. Because there is a famous Ramban, Kedushas Levi brings it down on Pirim, and he says that the inyan of matis oiri, natuiri matis oiri es ohavo ad shetechpots, which we translate according to him, that ad shetechpots doesn't mean only just the will, the desire, it means shetechpots, the evolution of chayfetz. When a person has a great moment, you have to turn it into something tangible, something real, something that you're going to do, something that is going to be active. Otherwise, that moment dissipates. And consequently, Yisroi, upon viewing these two events, recognized this straight away. How can it possibly be a nation that had a vision of Zekaili van Vayi could later resort to Hayesh Hashem bekirbayim ayin, and therefore I, who am this Eure, to see these wonderful things, Eiskola she'usu elekim le'moyshe el Yisua el Amoy, will have to do something about it. I'm going to do something tangible, I'm going to make a chayfetz out of it, I'm going to pick myself out, and I'm going to join them. And that's the stress of Ma Shmia Shuma Ibu. It wasn't that he heard it only, but he acted on it, and he came. You know that there is in his Sefer on Chanukah, Reb Shimshon Pinkus writes a fascinating story that happened, that he heard himself. In Los Angeles, he was there once on an Arachim, on a Kirov event. A doctor there in Los Angeles came over to him and said to him, I want to tell you a story. He says, you know that when I was in internship at the beginning in hospital, I was given the job that most doctors do, which is the night shift. Nobody wants that. But since you're a novice, you're still at the beginning of your internship. So they give you these 2 o'clock in the morning shifts. And I was tired. But nonetheless, when the emergency light drew to my attention that they've got somebody in an ambulance coming into the hospital at this late hour, I was shaken up into reality. And they told me that there's a jogger who was not far from the park, and the man had apparently a cardiac arrest when he was running. He overdid it, and in the ambulance they tried to resuscitate him. It wasn't terribly successful, and after a couple of attempts, it appears that the man died. And the doctor goes on to relate in the story that they wheeled the body into the hospital to see maybe there was one last attempt, but he was pronounced dead upon arrival. But you notice that the fellow was wearing tzitzis, and this doctor was called Barry. They covered over the body with a sheet, and he's writing out the formalities, the documents, to sign the man off. As he's writing and he's filling in the forms, he notices that there's a twitch from under the cover, and the sheet moves. Haloi Dubahu turns around, it's quiet again. He carries on writing out the form. Again, there's a movement. Twice he picks the sheet up, he takes it away, and the man has got his eyes open and he's staring him in the face. He was taken aback, but he didn't stop there. The man looked at the doctor and he said to him straight out, "Are you called Chaim Meir?" That really floored him, because the only person that knew him by that name was his grandmother. She used to call him Chaim Meir. To everyone else, he was called Barry. How did this jogger know his name? He didn't answer him, he just acknowledged with a nod. "Do you wear tefillin?" "No." "Do you keep kosher?" "No." "Well, start then." And with those three words, he closed his eyes. And in case there was any doubt, he took the various pulse and tests, and on the machines, the man was gone. He was very shaken, this Dr. Barry, and he picked himself up and he went into the coffee room with the doctors who were there on the overnight shift. And he shared with them what just happened to him with this jogger. And they said to him, "Barry, you need a strong coffee. It's time you took a break and got some rest. It's fine, it's okay, these things happen." And the doctor said, "No, I'm telling you, I just came." Yeah, we realize, it's okay. Go take a strong coffee, you'll be fine." 4 years went by until he met up with Rabbi Shimshon Pinkos, Zeicher Tzadik Levruche, and then he went to the Arachim convention, and of course there they brought him irrefutable proof of the existence of the Rabbeinu Shloim. They also shared with him thoughts about Yiddishkeit, and which ignited within him a sincere desire to change his path. But then, as a Balshiva, he came to Rabbi Pinkos and he shared the story. And Rabbi Pinkos said, "I don't understand. Can I hear it again? That was 4 years ago. You're telling me that 4 years passed by and you didn't do anything about it from this experience and this event until today?" "Yeah." So he thought then, and he writes there, and if you look at it in the Sefer on Chanukah, that's the Nekidah of Mash Mia Shuma Ibu. A person can be in denial of an event which is literally shatters the mind to think about it, how a jogger who's pronounced dead speaks to him with his name and tells him, you know, about what he should be doing. Eventually, when that happens, he recognizes in retrospect 4 years of denial, just shrugged it off until he told the story to Reb Shimshon. And that depicts, so to speak, Mash Mia Shuma Ibu. Just the experience is not sufficient. One has to actually act on it. Now, ready with Yisrael, let's understand from another Pasha in the Torah a little bit more about this personality. Because in Pashas Pinchos, he is introduced through Rashi. After Pinchos goes and slays Zimri ben Suli, then Rashi says that they called him Ben Pitizeh Shepitim Avi'im Ve'agulim Lavoy Dezura, and this is the man that, of course, he perpetuates the legacy of the Zayda, who was a Koyen Midyon, and he went out to join Klal Yisrael, but this is his great-grandchild, and therefore this stands to reason that genetically he is a great-grandson of Yisroel, and Yisroel was a mefater magulum lavoy desura. Stands to reason that this type of person can get up, take a spear, and kill a nusi by Yisroel. On one hand, it sounds deprecating, it sounds in a way, critical of Yisroel. But if you think about it in greater detail, you'll see that this shows a level of conviction that Yisroel owns, which, you think about it, if you talk Archbishop of Canterbury, if you ask him doing the menial tasks that go on in the big church, and the wine and the water and the bread and whatever they have there, which is necessary to... He's got a serf for that, he's got an underling, and those people are paid. And in those days, in Yisroel's days, he probably also had one or two people that worked for him within the vicinity of the church. And here a man goes, puts on his boots, goes into the stable, takes fodder, and he's fattening calves, puts his hand right down the throat of the calf, and fattens him up in the mud, in the chazarai, everything there. And what is he doing? Mefatem agulim lavoid zura. Azah b'chuvedik kezach. Moirudik. But if a person is an Ish Emes, then he really believes in the cause until he sees the light. And at this point, Yisroel genuinely believed that this was the Emes. And if that's the case, if we're going to bring sacrifices to this deity, let them be fat, let them be well fed, let them be good-looking cows and calves, yes, and I'll push the fodder into them. So I'll be mahada in the mitzvah, kaviyuch. And there, if somebody really believes with conviction to do something like this, it's not lignai, it's lishvach. And perhaps that's the reason that a person like Pinchas, who is a great-grandson of Yisroel, will actually go and take a spear and not look at anybody with their dais, what he should be doing, shouldn't be doing. Zimri and Suri is the Chanasi, Beis Ovla Shimoini. Who are you to go and take a spear and to kill him in front of everybody? But if you are an Einikel of an Ish Emes, who looks for the truth, and he doesn't consider at all the various opinions of others, then that's the Yisroel Shepitem Avi Imoy Agulem Avoid Zure. So we have a little bit of an introduction somehow to know the type of person that made that decision of Mashmi Ashuma Ibu, because being Kohen Midian, he was in a cushy job. And he was probably in a comfortable, respected place, and decided in the end to pick himself up, move to a wilderness, Mukam Shemumo, to join a Jewish nation who had just left slavery, and now he's going to be part of this, is going to integrate into the Jewish nation. There is, I'm thinking which word to say, because we've only got 10 minutes left, but I'll opt for the end of the Seder. Towards the end, when we speak about the Aseres HaDibros, you have the famous Lo Yisach Moed, which is the conclusion of the Aseres HaDibros. There are many interpretations of how we look at these various 10 dibros. Some say it's got to do with Aser Simai Tshiva. Some people have got to do with it. It's got to do with Asur Vurma, with the world which was created. But Lo Yisach Moed concludes in Beis Re'echo, Lo Yisach Moed Eishes Re'echo, and it goes on. Va'avdoi, va'amusoi, v'shoiroi, v'chamoiroi, and finally, v'choila she'le'reyechu. So there's a lot of detail in this pusik. He starts off by saying, do not covet, do not envy. First of all, his house, because he's got a beautiful mansion, and you're living in a semi-detached. Lo yisach moed eishes re'echu, you like his wife? Va'avdoi, and his slave, va'amusoi, v'shoiroi, v'chamoiroi. There's a lot of detail here. And why would it say v'chol asher le're'echo after that? The kasha was posed by the Satmar of a famous in a famous vote, but beforehand I remember hearing from, I think it was Rabbi Kirsch, he told me that there was a lady who sat down in a plane next to another lady, and she couldn't help but notice that this woman was wearing a 20-carat emerald-cut diamond on her finger, which really caught the light at whichever angle she held her finger. And she could not help but notice that she was almost blinded by the dazzle of this stone. Try as she may to look aside and to look askance, she kept drawing her eyes back to see that ring. And this lady was just drinking her orange juice, and the light is being caught on the stone and the facets, and she's looking and looking and looking, and she couldn't help staring. And the lady next to her obviously noticed that she's got her eyes on it. And she smiled at her. She smiled at her, so she took the courage and she said, "It's an amazing diamond." It really is. So the lady, who is the owner, says, "Yes, it's a famous diamond." "Oh yes, which one?" "So it's called the Plotnik diamond." "So what's the Plotnik diamond?" He says, "Yeah, the Plotnik diamond is famous because it comes with a curse." "Hmm. Which curse does it come with?" So she says, the Plotnik curse." "So what's the Plotnik curse that's associated with this diamond?" So she smiles and she says, "Mr. Plotnik." And that's what perhaps we should think of when we say this. She's taka wearing the 20 character. And taka bleaches, and it's reflecting the light at every possible angle. And you've got your eyes and you're coveting this diamond, but it comes with the attachment. Which brings me to a story which I heard recently. Mr. Sandhauser is here today? No, not. He would testify to this. There were two brothers. One was called Yankee and one was called Yossi. And they're both in the music field. Yankee was a keyboard player. Yossi was a singer. They're both extremely musical. And they're in the trade for years. They play for chasanas and they're well known. But on a quiet evening on the Malava Malka together, so Yankee shared his envy with his brother. He said, "You're the singer, I'm the keyboard player, you know, there's such a difference between us. Before I go to a wedding, you know what's involved. I have to go down to the machsan, start getting the speakers, schlepping them up the stairs, putting them into the car, then I have to take the keyboard and the wires. Till I've got them into the car, my back's already aching. Finally, I get to the hall, set up the speakers, set up the sound system, and the keyboard, trial, check the notes, then starts the microphones. How many singers we've got? One microphone, another one. Then we have to do the balancing of the sound. And I wish to help, it's already 10 minutes before the chippah. Along rolls my brother, Yossi, with his nice suit. He's ready 5 minutes before he comes to the microphone, picks it up, and he's off. Displays his vocal talents, singing to his heart's delight. We work through the chasna, it's a 3-hour event, time it's finished. Yossi puts down the microphone, goes over to the Bal Simcha, collects his pay packet, comfortably pockets the cash, Agiten oven, Mazel Tov, turns around and he goes home. And that's when the fun starts for me, because he's gone home, sure, but now I have to do everything in the Boy Beshulam and start taking down the microphones and packing away the sound system, switching it all off, putting it into its cases, putting it into my car, And finally, at 3:30 in the morning, I reach home, and then I have to put everything back down into the machsan. And so I'm telling you quite openly, my brother, you know, between the two of us, who's got the cushy job? So his brother smiles, looks down, and he says to him, you know something? I want to share with you that there's a flip side to that story. You want to know what it is? You're envious of me, huh? You think it's just so smooth. You've got an instrument that when you sit down to play, even if you've got the flu, as tired as you are, you take out that keyboard, and that keyboard plays. You know why? Because it's electrically amplified. You press the button, and on goes the machine. You press the keys, the chords, and they're all there. And the sound, and the rhythm, it's everything is there. If you're tired, you sit down, and you make your way through it. But I'll tell you that my instrument is as fickle as a feather. If I don't sleep, my voice is gone. If I don't drink enough water, my voice is not lubricated. And it crackles, and they notice it as well. The slightest cold or cough or flu, and then I have to pick up the phone and tell the Baal Simcha, I'm awfully sorry. I have to cancel the event, I'll find you somebody else. Because I can't sit if I'm hoarse. You can sit on a chair if you're tired. I can't, I have to stand. And I have to battle my way through the evening. You eat whatever you like. I can't even eat any chocolate because it clogs up my vocal cords. You know, I'll tell you a secret. I can't even shout at my wife or my children. Because if I overdo it, I'll get hoarse. And I won't be able to sing. And therefore, with all that, I can't even drink any wine at the chasen or any alcohol. Because that would also impede the way I sing. And you're envious of me? And then the brother, the keyboard player, says, you know something?
I think you're right.
Zug Steppes. You might be right. And he says to him, yeah, I'm right. My life is riddled with that anxiety 24/7. Because it's the smallest thing that kicks me out of action and it doesn't to you. So on the back of that, we say again, Lo yisach moed b'yisrei echo. Don't be envious of b'yisrei echo. Lo yisach moed eishesrei echo. You ask yourself, what's v'choyla shel erecho? Because there's a package deal. You're so convinced that he comes 5 minutes before the event, picks up the microphone and he's singing. Yeah, but what about all the other attributes, all the other flip sides, all the other drawbacks that he's got as a singer that you never even contemplated or thought about? And of that it says, because everything comes with strings attached. Thank you. Go ahead.